Medic one inbound to your facility. Emergency traffic on a 45-year-old male in cardiac arrest. Following multiple gunshot wounds. CPR in progress. Patient intubation. IO in place. Stay with you in 5 minutes.
Welcome to the EMS Handoff, your source for all things EMS. And now, let's welcome to the show your hosts, Bradley Dean, Eric McCullough, and David Blevins.
Hello, and welcome to the EMS Handoff Podcast. This is David, along with my co-host, Eric McCullough and Bradley Dean. We are your source for all things EMS. Tonight, we have a great group of guests. Not distinguished in any way. We've completely dispelled all of that. Nothing distinguished about any of them. Well, okay, maybe you, Allison, but the rest of the group, you and Deb were good. The others, the people may just hang up as soon as we tell them who's going to be. But we've got a great episode tonight on a very timely topic, actually, as we kick off Disaster Preparedness Month. We've been in it just a week. But this is a great topic. It's going to have a little bit of fun talking disaster tonight. But before we jump into all that, let's see how my co-hosts are doing last week. For those of y'all that got to watch the video, watching Bradley Dean talk about nitroglycerin administration while he's sitting there eating a nice steak and some caviar, just preparing for that inferior lateral that we were talking about. A perfect case study just for you, Bradley. How are you feeling this week, by the way?
He's unconscious, David.
He feels so good. He's speechless.
Well, I got kicked out again. I don't know what the deal was.
Now there's three Bradleys.
Oh, no. We cannot be that.
Bradley, we're talking about you. You get kicked out. We're talking right about you. This is all about disaster. So go right ahead, Bradley. How are you feeling?
Well, pretty good. I was working on some personal resilience today, and we visited a couple of wineries. So. That's why I'm cloning.
Every time. Just great. You know, but they talk about a glass of wine a day, I guess, helps keep the heart disease away. That's, some people say that. But what do you think about that, Eric? We're going to keep Bradley for another year?
Maybe. Yeah. You know what? I can't say anything. He kept our EMS Handoff Facebook page going after all those years. And I was like, why does he keep posting on that? And then when we revived, it was like, oh, man, that's a really good thing that he did all that. So he can have his wine and stuff. This week's been great. I have Labor Day weekend this week, so it's kind of nice for me. I know that's not the case for everybody, but I get to kind of set out for tomorrow, but then, yeah, goes right back to normal.
All right.
The day after.
I know, right? This past week, college football started, and of course, the University of Tennessee decided that Thursday 8 o'clock kickoff was absolutely the best thing in the world. But they forgot to check with all of our work and make sure and cancel that. So we still had classes on Friday, made for a very fun day after watching the first week of college sports. But
We had Banta and the guys who go to your place. They were flying over at the Blackhawks, and they got some cool videos from it.
Banta didn't.
Is it not Banta? I know it was Jimmy Contreras. I didn't know if it was Diaz.
Giovanni.
Giovanni.
Dez got it. A couple others. So that was awesome little experience as well. See the three Blackhawks flying over Neyland Stadium. So, all right. Before we get into it, like we always like to do, we want to. You would think, Bradley, I've been to the winery, and that's not happening. So, as we always like to do, we like to start off by thanking our podcast sponsor, the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. Jim's has been an industry leader for many years, and they've been a good friend of the EMS Handoff podcast since we decided to revive this. So make sure and go by the Jim's website at jims.com. You can check out all of our previous episodes, as well as our fellow podcasters on the EMS Today podcast. They're on the website, as well as on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Just a couple of those places. Don't forget to go by the Pursuit Company and check out our EMS Handoff line of merchandise. Got the Keyback line on today myself. Looks like Eric's got on the Subdued Black. He absolutely loves that thing. But you can go by the Pursuit Company at thepursuitco.com. go to shop and under affiliates, you find the EMS handoff. We have our short sleeve, long sleeve hoodies as we're getting into the winter and all that good stuff. So we're going to kick this off tonight. Like I said, got a topic of disaster preparedness month, and we come loaded with an entire cadre of guests tonight. If we were to do nothing but the bios that they send us, we would have their bios as the episode and we'd have to come back again. So we're going to kick it off really kind of short with the introductions. And so today we have, I even got all my papers all messed up right here. So we're going to go with what we got here first. So Deb Bell is joining us today, 36-year history in EMS. And hers, like most of us that we have on here, are rather extensive in what we do. So she works in the field for Inspira Health. She's also a state leader for the New Jersey EMS Task Force. I like this in yours that she's also with the United States Coast Guard. Man, a lot of people don't realize everything that they do, but that is an absolute awesome thing.
And to be clear, I'm on their managing board for the civilian sector, so I can't take credit for serving like the people who really do.
but you got some really great stuff. We also have William Tatum, who comes to us as the Region 2 Director for the National Association of EMTs, South Carolina Membership Coordinator. You've been on the Board of Directors. You serve on the Disaster Preparedness Committee, Membership Committee, Representative SAFECOM. If it's in EMS, he's got his hand in it. So, Mr. Tatum, thank you for joining us as well. We've got Allison Knox, good friend. It's one of those great things that, when we get into some of our listservs and we go back and forth quite a bit. She's also a board member for the National Association of EMTs and a contributing editor of EDM Digest, and teaches at Western Connecticut, Eastern Kentucky, American Military. I have to give American Military University credit. That is my graduate alma mater for emergency disaster management. So a lot of great things and interaction there as well. And so I'm going to go ahead. I don't have yours in front of me, Chief Schaefer. Go ahead and tell us who you are as well.
I'm Brian Schaefer. I'm a paramedic, fire chief out in the Pacific Northwest. That's all you got. I mean, that's all I am.
And then we have Tony Scott, good friend. We just got done with a project as well. Don't know that we could have researched EMS any more than we could. Hopefully we'll be seeing that project come out rather shortly. A lot of people on here put in some work there, but that's great. Tony, tell us who you are as well.
Hey guys, good evening everyone here. Hey, so real brief, I've been in EMS full-time since 2005. I'm a firefighter paramedic in the Washington, D.C. region. Captain currently signed to our emergency communication center. I've been very fortunate to be a member of the disaster preparedness committee for the last 3 years and very happy to be here tonight.
All right. Like I said, all right, guys, since that we're done tonight, we'll come back in another week and actually talk about our topics. But you know, as you can tell, we have a rather extensive history when it comes to EMS and EMS disaster management. So we're going to go ahead and just jump directly in here. Go to cut over to you, Allison. We're talking about, we bring in this now because it's Disaster Preparedness Month. And so what better opportunity to talk about this, but kind of give us what Disaster Preparedness Month means and a little bit about National Association of EMT's role in that as well.
Sure. Well, I think it's important when we're thinking about Disaster Preparedness Month to think about how we can go about preparing and what does that mean? So when it comes to emergency management, we're thinking about preparedness from the cycle of emergency management, but we're also thinking about it from how does this impact ambulances? How does this impact emergency medical services across the country? What does that mean?
Allison, can you hear us?
We're thinking about.
Oh, there you are. You cut out for just a second there.
Oh no.
It was her best stuff.
It was. Where did I cut out? So sorry.
About 10 seconds into what you were talking about. So So go ahead. One more. Hey, it's about perfect right here. So, this is disaster management at its best. How do you do this? We can back out, try again and get the job done.
Maybe you should be using FirstNet. We would always have connection.
Well, shoot. You have all frozen on my end.
Okay, we're going to hold on you, Allison, real quick. Let's go over to William. William can kind of give us a little pop in here and take over where Allison left off.
Hey, no problem, guys. Yeah, it's actually, if it's bound to happen, it's going to happen, right?
It always.
Always does. And, it is odd how we're coming right off of one hurricane, and I'm here in South Carolina, and we're looking at Larry out there just a brewing. Unknown where he's going to come up there. But, it's part of the job with EMS to help emergency management plan and prepare. We have a lot of coastline in South Carolina, and what do we do with those patients whenever they need to evacuate? And, we're working in South Carolina and across the country to help develop these plans, working with local and federal EMS folks, emergency managers, just to gather the ideas and help mitigate the situation as we can. We have to consider the meteorologists. We have to consider all the emergency services out there to help us plan and prepare for all this. And what a great time for all this to come up. And the NAMT is, started in 2015 by creating the Disaster Preparedness Committee and just finding how all of these folks can get together and make the best of any situation we can. So again, thanks for having us here tonight as well.
Thank you for that. And so you kind of made a reference there to the Disaster Preparedness Committee. I think kind of backing up just a little bit, looking at NAEMT itself, it's an organization that's been around for many years, talking about first starting in 1975, and it represents about 70,000 strong as far as providers that are out there. And one of the things that is interesting about NAEMT when it comes to this, they find all those little niches that not a lot of people look at, but EMS plays an integral part. So when we take a look at disaster preparedness, we have commonly looked at the fire service and law enforcement, and even emergency management is making a huge push in that area. But a lot of times we take a look at EMS just as those that are coming in to move patients. But we have a tremendous amount of resources that we ultimately bring to bear. So, Allison, how does EMS play in the disaster preparedness realm?
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways you can answer that. When we think about emergency management, we think about it on the local level, but we also think about it at the state and federal levels. So where EMS fits into that is really at the local level, because of course we're going to be managing patient care in the middle of major disasters and even small emergencies that we handle every day, right? But when it comes to the overall cycle of preparedness, when it comes to how we're going to be handling everything, our committee really focuses on where we can fill in those gaps, because those gaps are pretty extensive when you really start to get into all of the different pieces across the country and different communities and so on.
So let's peel that onion back just a little bit. So you're talking about gaps, and gaps are something that, if we take a look, if there's a service in Florida, they have very similar gaps to places in Washington, California, Maine, even in the Midwest, so trying to identify those areas and then get aspects out. So let's talk about specifically in this disaster realm. What about ways of improving the integration of EMS and disaster preparedness planning, more specifically to communications and interoperability? Because we're taking, a lot of times we're taking ambulances and personnel from one area and picking them up and putting them in somewhere else. As you mentioned, William, you know, Susan Bailey, who's the director of the Louisiana Bureau of EMS, was actually going to be on here this evening, but she's actually staffing their tactical operations center because of Ida. So our personnel are deeply embedded. So William, if you would, let's talk about that. And Tony, your role in 911 may get into that a little bit. So let's talk about the communications interoperability component.
Yeah, certainly. Communications is tough sometimes. You know, when you're talking about a VHF, UHF, 800 megahertz, you know, those kind of channels, not everybody has just a cadre of radios sitting around. And, you know, we try to instill that in our preparedness as well. So if you have a service coming down to do some disaster evacuations and repopulation too, then, you know, you have to have, if you're the county or services that are affected, that's a good plan to have some communications for the incoming services to use. You know, you have to think about what type of services are coming down as well. A lot of the nursing homes, for example, may be in contract with a private provider. And how many of those exist? How are those communications? Are they expecting all 75 of their residents to come out at one time, and a service that may have only 20 ambulances? So getting those resources in through disaster teams, strike teams, whatever you want to call them, and having those communications ready for them when they arrive is important. Have to plan for that as well.
So, Tony, let me kick it over to you just a second. With your specific role in communications itself, how many EMS agencies are ready for a disaster when it comes to communications and the influx of potential external responders?
That's good. So that's actually a question. I would say that the answer probably varies significantly based off of several different variables, right? If it's a fairly large urban area, probably has a whole lot more actual resources than say fairly small town out in rural Kansas, Oklahoma, Siberia, right? just like it's proper, right? Private ambulances typically have a much smaller resource pool overall than a government-based entity, right? Either as a fire department, specialized third service type model. So it's going to vary greatly. I would say on the whole, EMS is probably okay. We're not great just because of that wide range of overall capabilities.
So, Allison, I'm going to flip it over to you. One of our topics that we talk about regularly is, how do we pay for all of this? Right? So EMS is rather inexpensive. It doesn't cost much to get anything. I mean, radios are a dime a dozen, right? It's very easy to get all of this stuff together, right?
You know, I wish I could say that was true, but it certainly is not. It is a very complicated answer with what we can afford, isn't it?
I don't think anybody, I think that was probably the biggest joke that I could tell on here. You know, even through our committee, some of the stuff that we talk about is not just, you know, it's easy to sit down in a room. And I guess the easy part about financing of this is to sit down in a room and just talk about it. But when it comes down to the implementation, that's the biggest problem. So in the committee, we try to get down into those realms where we try to offer ways that or at least explore ideas of ways to pay for things. So, all right. So as we take a look under our current construct, you know, if we break out the emergency response plans under emergency planning, we typically fit under ESF 8, which is a public health model. So over the last almost 18 months now, we've been dealing with the pandemic. And so with this, we've learned a lot about how our current plans exist and changes that could be made. So, William, I'm going to kind of toss this out here because this is some of the things that we get into talking about. Are our plans set up to make sure that EMS is well recognized and placed for everything that goes on in the disaster community?
So I think for normal emergencies, if there is such a thing, we probably are prepared. But, you know, tossing in a pandemic in the middle of all this is it's different. It's a different world, a different beast we're living in. You know, again, if you're in an evacuation mode, gathering patient information, how up are the charts of these patients you're picking up? Do you know their COVID status? You know, are we relying on those nursing homes or wherever we're picking these patients up from a resource that's 4 hours away, 6 hours away, states away, coming in to assist? How are they going to be prepared to deal with an ongoing pandemic? You know, there is a variety of prevention ideas out there. Some services are surgical masks, some are N95, some are face shields, some are, you know, an MSA 100 mask, air packs. I mean, who knows what everybody has? And then how are they going to be able to be sustained for 7 days, 10 days, however long the operation is going to go? It's the worst of the worst, if you will, and that's all about what preparedness does, is you have your scenarios built out. You know, oh, it's just a hurricane, we're going to evacuate X number of people, and now there's a pandemic. What are you going to do? Or there's a train derailment or whatever. You know, you have to throw those little caveats in there when you're doing your cookbook plan for a disaster. So overall, I feel now that we're, you know, so many months and a year and a half or so into it, I think we can handle it. You know, we just got to be creative sometimes.
We're, you know, so it's quite interesting because one of the things you're talking about right now, not only are we dealing with the daily 911 calls in certain areas, we've had Ida come through, like you said, Larry's in its way. We've got large wildland fires out there on the West Coast that Chief Schaefer knows a ton about, and we'll get into here shortly. But there's that going on. Then we talk about a national shortage of EMS personnel at the same time. So I know Chief Schaefer wants to jump in. So what do you have, sir?
How did you know that? No, I just, I really like what was said a second ago about all the simultaneous things and, you know, how we can handle them. I think the other way to look at it is we don't have any options. It starts with Tony in the communication center, and it ends with Tony in the communication center, and everything that's in between is our responsibility. There's no 912. We don't have anybody else that we're able to call. And you touched on, you know, just the planning. The planning part to me is, most of us, but this is, I think, my 30th year as a paramedic. So we've all been around through, you know, insert the name of the bug that we had to deal with, or the mass casualty or the collapse. But, you know, you're looking at a global humanitarian crisis, a pandemic, the worst wildfire season that we've ever seen, tropical storms, earthquakes in Haiti, flooding and typhoons, international wildfires across the globe, and then throw in a little, you know, United States social unrest. There's not a really good plan for that. I think we ran out of annexes, what, Allison, probably like at C or D. And now we're like on double Z, 0.2-3, carry the 3, divide by pi, something. It's really hard to imagine 30 years ago that we would be here today. But if we didn't have the people in the industry that we have, I don't think we'd be able to get this far. And it's certainly not over. I think we've got a lot of this pandemic that's left. And we certainly do with the contributions from climate change as well.
So it's funny that you mentioned that. Last year, as as our institution went on spring break, is when everything really started to change. And for us, it was an immediate message from our president, say, come up with a plan. We're not sure what it's going to look like, but come up with a plan. So basically I wiped everything off the whiteboard in my office, because I have a classroom size whiteboard in my office just for stuff like this. And I put plan AA, or I put plan A, plan B, and plan C. We already had, and was like, you know, that way when he comes down with what our first action was going to be, we already had three plans developed. It wasn't before the end of that week. We had already made it all the way to like AAAB. And so after that, it was a conversation. It was like, what plan are you on now? I'm like, guy, it has no name. I've run out of alphabet. So let's change to that side, because we've talked a lot about the committee, and we're going to talk a little bit about how to join if you so desire here in the near future. But we're going to change to that preparedness side. Since she has been quiet so far, I'm going to kick it over to her first, because this is an area that not a lot of us really kind of think about. So before we get into the very specific areas, I think the first place that we really need to discuss is really us. We do a lot of great planning about making sure that nursing homes are taken care of, and or extended care facilities are taken care of, making sure the community is taken care of. But first and foremost, we're the ones that are going into a lot of these places. So let's talk about practitioner preparedness first, Deb, and let's get your take on what it takes for preparedness within our response partners.
Thank you. Yes, I've been very fortunate to have obtained a great amount of funding for specialized resources for EMS, over a decade of planning for EMS. But at the end of the day, you need the human resource side. We need the people to respond. And as was mentioned already, we're living in a world with a lot of EMS shortage, people working multiple positions for different agencies. And so we can't encourage you enough to be prepared and ready for events such as this. Always maintaining situational awareness. Some people like to sit back and wait for somebody to tell them what's happening. Realistically, you look out for you. Maintain that situational awareness. What's happening now? What's forecasted to happen in the future? And as these events occur nationwide, follow them, understand them, what worked well, what could go better. For yourself, you want to make sure your home is taken care of first, whether you take care of your family, your children, elderly, your pets. Do you have plans for them? Typically, minimally, they tell you to be prepared for 72 hours, but many advocate now at least a week. And if you're going to choose to deploy with a team such as the New Jersey EMS Task Force, any of the federal teams out there, a lot of the VOAG or volunteer agencies, they tell you to prepare for 2 to 3 week deployments. So making sure that home is taken care of first. You want to have approvals from your agency. So if you work multiple positions, giving availability to all of them, it needs to be clear that you're not solely available just to that one agency. You could potentially be picked up to work somewhere else, and now you're not available to work. And that needs to be clear for the planning piece. Having your equipment, your clothing, having personal protection equipment, airway. Right now, we are pretty good on that because of COVID. But back at 9/11, when people responded up to New York City and other areas, unfortunately, PPE wasn't as readily available and wasn't a first thought. And there's a lot of people dealing with lung injuries because of that. So always have PPE available to you. Boots, hand protection. You know, when you get these storms coming through, these hurricanes, there's a lot of debris in the water. In our area, when we had Hurricane Irene and Sandy, we had a lot of our oil tanks uprooted. We have septic systems in the ground that uprooted. So when you're walking in the water, which may be salt, which may be just river water, it's also mixed with a lot of toxins that you don't want on your body. So have some protective wear available. And again, something to protect your hands. Water, very dangerous. We just saw it here in Jersey as Ida passed through. The majority of the deaths that occurred in New Jersey were people in cars that drove into flooded areas. So first, have your car ready for response to work, wherever you have to report, fully fueled. You might even have some extra cans of fuel at home. When the power goes out, gas stations can't pump. So have that prepared. Don't drive into the water. Don't go into water, particularly without a flotation device. One that ideally would activate if, say, you were rendered unconscious and you hit the water, that it would activate and at least maintain you. Besides having your PFDs, you want to have a throw rope. So if you have to help try to rescue somebody, you potentially could. Or for some reason, you do need to go to the water. You're able to keep that water, that rope handy, so you have a lifeline to get yourself back out. Flashlights. Young kids today all say, I have my cell phone. I don't need a flashlight. Well, when you go for a day or two with your phone blowing up, maybe nowhere to charge it, you want to have a flashlight, day or night shift, because when the power's out and you're in a shelter or you're searching a room or a building to find somebody, you need a flashlight to see where you're going. Again, staying clear from the water as best possible. Having changes of clothes, particularly socks and other boots. It's very uncomfortable first to have wet feet that stay wet because you can't change your shoes. So in your preparedness pack, have another pair of boots and multiple pairs of socks, towels. Dry your feet off. The last thing you want is blisters or infections on your feet. If you're working in an area where there's generators, you know, maybe be mindful for safety to that. There should be carbon monoxide monitors reading in that area. Have some cell phone chargers with you. Maybe the devices that you can also charge the phone besides plugging in. Have your radios charged and be ready to go. And certainly keep in mind the sustained winds. In New Jersey, we use cutoffs of 50 miles per hour of sustained wind or gusts of 70 miles an hour for our ambulances. And then the larger vehicles, buses, mass care vehicles, we use 40 miles an hour for the sustained wind, 60 miles an hour for the gusts. Same way you're driving your vehicle. We have to get there safe. If not, we can't help anybody. So be prepared in the front end to help out when it's time to respond.
So you made several great points there. I'm going to start off with one. And I personally, I think there's a quote in the movie Act of Valor that was very well pointed. And it, while, you know, they're obviously pointing to the Navy SEALs and those that were going all these missions, the platoon leader came up and said, hey, he used this language, said, when we step off on the platoon, when they go out on mission, he goes, if everything is not back right at the house, then it's going to affect everything that we have going on. There's relationship issues, if there's child issues, if there's finance issues, and he kind of went into all of that. So that's, you know, that's one of the things that on a daily basis we go in for 12, 16, 18, 24 hours, whatever our roles are. And it's, you know, it's something that we can usually deal with, that we don't have to, you know, we may get a couple of phone calls, but people don't realize that when you're on these long-term things that it dramatically impacts your focus that you have to the patients and the mission that you have there. So that is definitely something to think about, especially if you know something is going on. We have to work on each one of those. And the second one that you mentioned there is absolutely marvelous. I have to give my Army colleagues credit for this, as much as an Air Force person hates to do this. I actually learned it for the first time in doing what is called the Mountain Man Memorial March, which is a fundraising effort in East Tennessee, going through the mountains of Gatlinburg on a half marathon distance or a full marathon distance. And all of a sudden you see these large group or contingent of Army people that are walking, and they stop. They break out their packs, and the first thing they do is take off their boots, change their socks, and they keep going. Yeah. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, dry environment, perfect environment on a street, no streams, no nothing. And they're like, you take care of your feet, because once they're gone, you're gone. And so that is absolutely imperative for us. And so Deb, you know, she's taking care of a lot about hurricanes.
The most underutilized resource, Ziploc bags. Like, the big ones, the small ones, have them all. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten over like wet, nasty, cold terrain, and everything's in Ziploc. And not don't get the Kroger brand. don't get the Walmart brand, get the good stuff. You know, you need, you need the zippy ones. It makes green color, whatever. If you're colorblind, that's a bummer, but you want to get all that air out. Make sure you don't cheap out on your Ziploc bags on that one. For your sandwiches for work, absolutely get Kroger brand, but don't cheap out on your Ziploc bags for disaster preparedness.
Eric's comment is brought to you by Target.
Hey, if they want to sponsor us, this would be a great
Target.com. 20% of your time.
Yeah, this would be a great time. They can drop a promo code here and we could get the benefit from that. Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. Thanks, Chief. We appreciate that. And I will actually go a little bit further than that. And I like the vacuum. The ones you close and then you use your vacuum to pull all the air out so you can put more in your bag, but you also know when that bag is compromised. But just don't put I failed once. I went on a military trip to Germany and I packed my bag full. We just not realizing that we didn't have vacuums where we were going. So trying to repack my bag on the way back was even harder. But all great points there. So Chief Schaefer was talking a little bit ago about the wildfires that were going on. And so when we talk about practitioner preparedness for something like that in the Midwest or the West, you know, what kind of things do we need to prepare for on that side, Chief?
Well, the cool thing about our industry is we're all risk, right? So a lot of the things that you were talking about that Deborah was mentioning is completely relevant for here. And despite what Eric thinks, we do have rain here too. So we will need those Ziploc bags brought to you by Target at target.com. Click here in the upper right-hand section of your podcast. One of the things that we really run into, though, in all seriousness, when people get the phone call, we use a system called Ready, Set, Go here, kind of a level 3, 2, and 1 for evacuations. And when people get that notice, and we've been doing it a lot this year, we've evacuated neighborhood, community, larger area, county. We've been doing a lot up and down the California coast and into Oregon and Washington and Idaho, Montana. It's been a very busy fire season, but one of the maintaining issues that we run into are people just aren't prepared. Or the comment is, I didn't think that this could happen to me. And I'm dealing right now with trying to get one of my paramedics off the line in a fire in the Okanagan. We just coded his father-in-law, and trying to get somebody home during an incident when you're deployed for 14 days on a type 2 or a type 1 incident is incredibly complex, takes a lot of time. All of that stress, which is the same thing as fear that happens during those really crazy catastrophes and evacuations, all can be handled much better if you have a plan, you talk about it, and you practice it beforehand. So some of the things that we picked up here is to make sure that providers and the general public have copies of their financial and identification and all of their relevant paperwork that they need to survive for 72 plus hours with them ready to go. Folder by the door, spare keys, some of the normal contact information that we need when we deploy our people, because one of my only primary job as a fire chief is making sure that the people that I work for are successful. And being successful means having that connection to home and making sure that when somebody falls off of the handlebar, the thing in the playground, then they break their arm, that they have a connection, whether it's a sat phone back home or there's some pre-established method of communication. And that's what we try to do for our people, to make sure that they're connected when they're deployed. Same thing for the family, the families that are in these areas. I think Deb mentioned the situational awareness piece. Pay attention. We lost well over 200 homes tomorrow last year. So a year ago tomorrow in a community named Pine City in Malden, Washington. We just completely lost an entire two communities in Whitman County, just to the south of us here. And they're still trying to rebuild. They're still trying to get parts of their lives that that they had to collect in a period of probably 10 minutes. That's the only time that they had to actually evacuate on that fire. So, you know, if you can spend 10 minutes ahead of time, it could save your life and make your, I guess your rehab process as you work through the losses a heck of a lot easier.
Well, a lot of people don't realize the effects of wildfires. And that was tested here in our area. You know, in the eastern part of the country, you don't tend to have as many. But in 2016, we had one here in East Tennessee. It was, for us, it was the largest that had ever occurred. But a six-month drought for us, October's with 100-degree temperatures coupled with potentially some arsonistic type events that occurred, and then 70 mile an hour winds, and our responders in this area ended up finding something that nobody realized, but a couple of things that you went into there, and it kind of goes back to even what Deb said is trying to have things right at the house before you go. You know, there were responders that were responding to other people's houses burning down while their own was burning down as well.
Right. And, you know, we as our community here in the Pacific Northwest, we've had over the last couple of weeks, people deployed on incident management teams that are in positions like mine, where you're responsible for people and a line of duty death occurs back home. You know, I mean, there people in our positions and leadership really is regardless of rank. So one of the things that our industry needs to step up and do is really improve that connectedness. And we talk about brother and sisterhood all the time, but we need to make that culture investment and improve it. And we're seeing the effects of it across the board. The discussion about mental health, and I know you've done talks about it before here, it is so important. And it is so evident in just about every part of the EMS industry right now.
We're going to transition over to Tony for the next couple of minutes as well and talk about some of the learned practitioner preparedness for what we've been dealing with right now. Again, over the last 18 months, talking about public health crises and pandemics. So, Tony, what topics do you have there?
So as I was sitting preparing for this throughout the day, I sit on my work laptop, typed up this whole really, really nice, long, comprehensive list. And then everybody else is taking all this stuff I already had written down, like every other presentation, right? So I would say overall, planning really has to start now prior to the next pandemic, be it COVID-24, H12N6, Ebola, right here, whichever is actually coming next. Carl Kim and his group out of the National Preparedness Training Center over in Hawaii has an article coming out in the Transportation Research Interdisciplinary Journal coming out, basically finding that there was a large portion of our industry, right, EMS, fire, emergency management, public health, had zero pandemic planning set up prior to COVID-19 hitting, right? Very little planning, very little training, guys, for us had a very significant operational impact early on back in the late winter or early spring of 2020 when all this stuff started. Once again, public health, mental health has really been a really big issue for EMS, fire department, public safety as a whole over the last 18 months, 2 years. The COVID hasn't helped that any, which is really something else we should be talking about. Really should have that part of our actual plans as we are moving forward. I would say that I would say that the actual number one thing all of our practitioners can do to very much help out for the actual preparedness side thing, educate themselves, looking at CDC, ASPR, all these other sources to really find out what's actually sliding down the actual pike force. Right. But just aside from that, proper BSI, right? Proper BSI, gloves, eye protection, mask, jazz hands don't really count anymore, right? BSI says safety. You walk in, I got my BSI on, right? However, guys, we have to actually do it. Diet, exercise, physical health, mental health, right? Take care of ourselves first, take care of our family before we can really, really have that positive operational impact for the various communities that we serve.
I feel like I need to say preach, Tony. Preach, man. Just preach. Yeah.
I was going to say amen.
Yeah. Got to get an amen.
We get the whole sermon. We go, hallelujah. Tony, you make some really good points there because I think this is something that even in the pandemic response, that's kind of been left out as well, that when you take a look at something like this, health and wellness for ourselves is integral. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? Well, we need to focus on eating well, drinking well, exercise, and again, just practicing mental health and such is so just absolutely phenomenal. So I appreciate all of those points. And while, you know, some of them had been taken by Chief Schaefer and Dev, you had several there as well. So you never give up on those. So I'm going to turn it back over to William and Allison just a minute. And just kind of talk about if you all are already there, but if anybody else wants to join this effort, there's a few of us, some of us that haven't, by the way, I'm going to go ahead and give a shout out to a couple. One, Susan Bailey was going to be here tonight. She's our committee chairman. Like I said, she's down in the Tactical Operations Center for Louisiana, recovering from Ida as well. But we have, Rebecca Carmody from Nevada. Can't remember. Chris Hattis from Maryland, Jake Johnson from South Carolina. We got Allison that's on here. Norm Rooker, Virginia Ruiz, and Mr. Knox as well from New York. So committee is vast, but in the realm, if you take a look at everything that we're doing, we're going to put some of these in the show notes as well. We've got liaisons that are meeting with many of the different organizations. Chief Schaefer is part of the Peace Act for FirstNet, and he inundates us with knowledge because he is all over FirstNet. I heard Bradley talking about that just a little bit ago. William on SafeCom. Deb is with IAEM. That's the hardest one I've ever had. The IAEM Healthcare Caucus. We have them with the NFPA technical committees and everything. So William and Allison, I'll let you decide how you split this. Kind of talk about if anybody's interested in NAEMT and joining the Disaster Preparedness Committee.
Well, of course, ladies first. So, Allison.
Oh, I was going to let you go first. I think the long and the short of it is the more we can have people talking about disaster preparedness, kind of the more the merrier. It's a great topic. There's a lot of different things we can focus on. And in these different conversations, we're able to pinpoint different areas that are problematic. So there's that. Join our committee if you're interested. And then the other piece too is if you're not a member of NAEMT, to think about joining because you can also contribute to these conversations too as members.
Absolutely. I feel there's strength in numbers and, everyone brings something to the table. You know, they may think it's a small piece, but, just the conversations tonight and listening to Chief Schaefer of how to prepare. He touched on a subject that I had not really thought about. And it led to another conversation of, you've got a team out there on the line. We should throw a RIT team into our preparedness, you know, who's going to replace those? Do you have a strike team on the ready if something does go down? So just bringing this group of people in the conversations we've had in this short amount of time, imagine what kind of conversations we can have as a group. And when we broaden that out to entire emergency preparedness. So, you know, absolutely the NAMT is a strong organization, but we need more folks. It's inexpensive, $40 to join the NAMT, and you can be part of any of the committees out there. And disaster preparedness is one, still young. Again, we started in 2015. So there's disasters that happen every day, and we need that expertise to come to our committee. So thank you.
And giving all of us, because I think every single one of us had an impact in it. I'm not going to release everything yet, but, you know, just I've been 2 years on the committee. And one of the things is like, we all know that there's committees that get together for the sake of being a committee. But I have seen some tremendous work come out of the organization. Some of it, we've all been here, and it's one of those it's one of those that you kind of hope gets plugged in, and because it has the ability to light up everything, and you know, some great work that's being done. So I want to thank each one of our guests here tonight. We've kind of sat back. Eric's been, I think, taking a ton of notes for the show notes. I've got quite a bit to send him. Bradley doing the same thing. I'm gonna give my co-host real quick an opportunity to just kind of give us their last thoughts or any questions, and then to any of the panelists that are on here tonight, if you have any last thoughts, as soon as Eric and Bradley get done, we'll kick it over to you guys. So Bradley, Dean, you've been the quietest one here tonight. Give us your last thoughts, sir.
So a couple of quick thoughts. I don't care if it's a natural disaster, a man-made disaster, there's always a public health aspect to it because of the things that we're going to be dealing with. I hope all agencies are keeping notes throughout this entire pandemic, because in another 10 to 15 years after this one slows down, we're going to see the next one. We really need to prepare for the fibroviruses or whatever else is going to be out there. You know, we had the groundwork laid for this one with H1N1, but we had to modify a lot of plans to make sure things were actually going to work, because we'd never really exercised them to their fullest extent. So in closing, that's just my thoughts.
Eric, what about you?
This is kind of a weird aspect of it, but this is a great recruiting tool for people who want to get civically involved and don't want to join the military, but they want to do they want to be a part of helping their community out. And I know everybody's having EMS problems right now with getting EMTs and paramedics. This is a great tool to say, hey, high schoolers, this is a skill set that you can use. And yeah, you may not do it full time, but you could get your EMT or advanced EMT license, do whatever it is you want to do at school, university, or whatever, and then you can still use your licensure to be able to help out in some of these disasters and stuff. So you can scaffold a brand new generation of rescuers who may want to get involved, but they don't know how. So I think it's just another aspect to consider.
All right. So any of our panelists have any final words that they want to kick over that we haven't discussed in the last hour?
It's Debbie. Just learn from our past and plan for our future, because we're going to still see disasters occurring, whether it's weather-related, man-made, you know, pandemics. They will continue to happen. We can only perform better if we learn from the past and think forward.
All right. Anybody else?
Yeah, hey, David, Tony. Hey, real quick, especially for any agency heads or like planning people out there, get yourselves at that exercise drill, functional exercise level with our HHS partners. Right, get ourselves into the actual planning process, part of the overall. Emergency management community opposed to simply having a actual agency specific plan. Get ourselves part of that overall community response.
And definitely I'd add to that too. You know, don't be the first time you meet the emergency manager the time the event happens, right? So put a face and name together and, you know, have that conversation, have a sit down, have a drink, have a meal with someone and start preparing and, you know, practice as if you are going to do it. You know, make the drills as real as they can, run through the scenarios. Tabletops are great. It's never nothing like the real thing. So, you know, have someone else come and evaluate your plans, ask a neighboring county, state, whatever. Just involve all kind of folks when you're starting to talk about emergency preparedness and planning.
Well, I want to thank each and every single one of you. My final thoughts on this is, you know, this is a humongous area for planning when you take a look at businesses such as Waffle House and Lowe's. And for us, we actually have one in here called Pilot Travel Centers as well. If you take a look at their emergency planning, it's long since joked that you know that it's bad when Waffle House closes their restaurants in the area. And the reference that FEMA uses their disaster to manage theirs as well. You know, they take a look at this because in the term for them, it's very much a dollars thing. When you take a look at some of them, they base it off of community response, and we all are there, but we have a role there as well. So if those organizations are willing to do it to make sure the community sustains, we should be looking at it as well. And so one of the things that it takes a very big thing to look at is, what are they doing? You know, they're staging and preparing and taking a look. You know, they have everything. So for each one of us, you know, that's out there, get involved, take a look, build the plans, test the plans, you know, tabletops, active events, and make those go to work. And then hopefully in the military, when I was in emergency management there, it was plan for or plan for the best, or sorry, plan for the worst.
Oh, you say Army. That was Army, gone. Right, Rory?
That's what on the Navy.
Anyway, we're going to plan for the best, hope for the rest. You know, we want to be there, focused on what's there. And then if it ever gets used, it gets used. Hopefully it never does. So pursue peace, train for war. That's actually the motto of our merchandise line. So as we wrap up tonight, we always like to say we love recording these. We want your feedback. So make sure and go to our podcast platform. If you're listening on audio, you go to EMS Today Podcast on Apple, Google, or Spotify. Subscribe, rate, and review there. For our video, you can go over to YouTube, where you may be watching this right now and found this very interesting. Chief Schaefer is keeping us laughing here. So make sure to go there and subscribe. Give us some feedback. Also, you can go to our website at emshandoff.com. Don't forget to go by the Pursuit Company and get our nice merchandise line. Again, our Keep Back podcast line has been one of our most popular, but we have short sleeve, long sleeve, and sweatshirts right there for you. So, as we always like to end, this is David. On behalf of my co-host, Aaron McCullough and Bradley Dean, take care, stay safe, and always remember the value of your EMS handoff. Trying to... There we go. Stop.